There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Now, we live in a world obsessed with body image and the way we look. From thigh gaps to killer abs, both men and women find themselves presented with filtered, photoshopped images and cultural and family pressures, which can contribute to body shaming and even body dysmorphia. Dr. Thuraya is here from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. She's a clinical psychologist and here to offer emotional support to anyone in need, as well as offering her expert insights on this topic. Good afternoon, Dr. Thuraya.
Good afternoon, Helen.
Ramadan Mubarak.
Thank you to you as well.
How's your week going?
It's going well.
Is Ramadan a busy time at the clinic or a bit quieter?
It is, and it's amazing all at the same time because I get to leave work at 6, which is very rare for me.
Really?
Yes. Usually I work around 8:30, 9 p.m., so during Ramadan, I get to take off a little bit more hours.
You've been enjoying some iftars, I've heard.
Yes.
What are your top iftar picks so far this year?
Honestly, I love the Pinch Gourmet in Times Square.
I keep on hearing about Pinch.
It's really, really good. The food is amazing, and it feels like a home cooked meal, which is something that, you know, for a lot of expats who don't live at home with their families, it's really nice. Mm-hmm. Also, there's I think the food is just great, really,
and a nice departure from the kind of big hotel buffets. If you want something that's a bit more intimate, that seems to be a really good pick. Okay, now you've worked with a really diverse client base. So you do specialise children with learning disabilities and those with clinical based issues, also women and eating disorders. So this is a really apt topic for you this afternoon. Dr. Thuraya, have you ever been body shamed?
I have. Actually, when I was a kid, I had a really high metabolism. So I was always the very thin one. Mm-hmm. And usually, ironically, a lot of people think that thin shaming is not really a thing. You know, but when I was a kid, I was made fun of consistently.
Really?
About how thin I was. And actually, my friends used to join in on the thin shaming. So the running joke was the French word for, like, it was le twig. So I was
sounds like chic shaming, le twig.
But actually, yeah, for a very long time, I was constantly made fun of. And then they would say things like, oh, you're probably anorexic because you're so thin. So there was the assumption. Assumptions. Yeah, things like that. So
that's interesting that we think automatically about body shaming, that we think it's more to do with fat shaming, and that thin shaming isn't taken as seriously, perhaps. So I'd be interested to get people's take on that subject. I think everybody's been body shamed at some point, for sure. I mean, I was a really skinny kid and, you know, I was always made comments about, oh, she's going to go down the plug hole and, you know, after a bath. And, I, you know, living in a kind of era where my grandparents had lived through the war and food was love. Then that became the thing of, like, you know, must feed her up. And now, you know, I'm definitely plus size and it used to upset me when I used to get comments. And it doesn't bother me anymore at all, to be honest. I think often we say the worst things to ourselves rather than what people say to us. But it's also a cultural thing. There's always a few classic comments that come out, you know, if you're going for a massage or for a pedicure or people asking if you're pregnant or a friend of mine was told that when looking at her stretch marks that her skin was too small for her body, which, you know, sounds like a comical thing to say, and bless it, you know, she has the absolute self-confidence to this turn into a funny story. But if you're told comments when you're feeling at low ebb, or you've got low self-esteem, you're having a bad day, things can cut really, really deep. So how do you define body shaming as a clinical psychologist?
Well, body shaming is basically the negative judgments on a person's body, not just type, but look. So anything that has to do with a physical appearance. So the intent there is to make the person feel like there's something wrong with them, like they're not good enough, that there's something that's missing in that statement. And so when we're talking about a person's body image, it's anything that has to do with their physical nature and their physical appearance. So it doesn't necessarily have to just be weight. It could be, you know, facial structure. It could be sizes of certain areas of the body. It could be, you know,
skin,
tone, the tone color, of the body as well, everything. So it's about taking that person's body and then making a negative judgment with the intent to hurt so that they can feel that they're not good enough.
So it's definitely a form of bullying, then.
Absolutely.
Now, where does the shame tend to come from. We're living in times now where bombarded by images, I'm sure social media will be a big factor we'll be talking about later on. What about family?
So family is actually one of the most influential contributors to body shaming. And, you know, when we look at the statistics actually show us that mothers actually contribute to 63% of women's body dissatisfaction, mm-hmm. and mothers contribute to 40% of men's body dissatisfaction. So you can see that it's a very high statistic in terms of how men and women will accept their own bodies. And usually that happens, and it's not really of intent. It's not like the mother is trying to harm the child, but things like, you know, you're getting a little chubby around the edges, or, you know, you're too thin, eat some more, mm-hmm. or, you know, you need to tone that up a bit, or, you know, you're starting to get a little bit of a belly. Like these kinds of things, even though a parent thinks that they're actually helping a child, they're actually really damaging some of the most essential characteristics that help with self-esteem, especially during teenage or early adolescent years.
It's interesting. The same survey said grandmothers were also big body shamers, with 35% of women and 17% of men reported they were too big, too small, too short, too tall, and a host of other things by their grandma. The seemingly innocent little old ladies getting the jibes in there. But I think the parental aspect is so important, because those comments can really kind of create your own self-identity from a really early age. We've got to be so careful about the words we use around our children. And this is something you've experienced during the conversation 4001, or message us for free on the Dubai iMessage app. Perhaps you're concerned about someone in your family and their health and their weight, and you don't know how to talk to them without body shaming them. Or perhaps someone in your family has been body shaming you over the years, and you don't know how to have that conversation with them to make it stop. Now, we're going to play a clip here, which I absolutely love. There's a fantastic body positivity movement going on social media. This is Body Posy Panda, also known as Meg, and she has 1 million followers on Instagram. She features her videos on YouTube. She's the best-selling author of Body Positive Power. She likes talking about body positivity and feminism. And here she is talking about her cellulite.
We're going to talk about it's cellulite. Wait a minute. Booyah. Cellulite. So there you go. We are less than a minute in and I am already trouserless. It's a good start, really, isn't it? So what is cellulite? Well, if you do a quick Google search, you'll get about 15 million results about cellulite. And out of the first 10 pages I scrolled through, there was literally one article about accepting it, and all of the rest were how to get rid of it. They were calling it disgusting, hideous, ugly, a flaw, unsightly, embarrassing, unhealthy, and most of them, unsurprisingly, were also promising to reveal the big secret of how to finally get rid of your cellulite. And they were selling everything from lotions and potions and creams to gadgets and gizmos and wraps to laser surgery and invasive surgery. One of them was selling this weird thing that looked like a tree branch with little suction pads on it that you just like hit your cellulite with. And these things cost anything from like 10 quid to thousands and thousands of pounds for invasive surgery. So the message is very clear that whatever cellulite is, we should be spending a whole lot of time and energy and money trying to get rid of it. So what actually is cellulite? Cellulite happens when fat cells...
There we go. Everybody has it. Men and women alike. Cellulite is very much there, and guess what? There is no cure for it, people. Always remember that clip in Bridget Jones where her mum's working on the kind of the beauty counter and are talking about anti-cellulite creams, and the kind of gist is, if you could rub it on your skin and it would solve what was happening in your body, wouldn't self-tanner be tanning your fat? would it not all just be seeping down? So it's very much not a cure. And the body positive movement is all about embracing your body. And that's something that feels to be like quite a modern phenomenon, really. We're now in a position where we can have people coming forward on these platforms. As you said, Megan's got 1 million followers to really talk about embracing ourselves. We've come a long way, but there's also a long way to go. Do get your messages in. One here saying, I've had comments from beauticians before saying I've gained weight or pointing out my stretch marks. Why can't people just mind their own business? I'm not sure how this falls into the body shaming, because there are certain cultures, and often a language barrier there, where people just are saying what they see, not in a way of shaming you, just because they perhaps don't know any better. Is this something you've come across, Dr. Thurow?
Absolutely. And actually, some of my clients will experience that and will take that quite internally, and they'll internalize it in terms of they'll think that, oh, she's trying to make me feel bad. And because of the beautiful nature of Dubai, but also the complicated nature of Dubai in terms of the multiculturalism that's here, a lot of people don't understand different cultures and the way they communicate. So some cultures are just very, very straightforward, very, you know, blunt, and will tell you what it is, but they're not, the intention is not to hurt you. It's not to denigrate you. It's really just to tell you what they're seeing. And that can be quite shocking for a lot of people that don't come from that sort of come from a culture that, you know, you have to be polite and respectful and not mention things. Even if you do see them, you don't say it out loud, just to protect other people's feelings. So when you have so many different cultures, you have to accommodate for the difficulties that you might experience during that kind of communication.
We talk about body shaming and body dysmorphia. According to a survey from the US in March this year, 93% of women and 83% of men have reported being body shamed. What I find interesting about that statistic, Dr. Thuraya, is the men is a lot higher than I thought it was going to be. That's huge.
You know, it's ironic. A lot of people feel that body shaming only mostly happens with women, but that's not actually the fact. There are a lot of men that are body shamed, but just about different things. Now, definitely there is a weight factor for both genders in terms of, you know, fat shaming and things like that. However, men have a lot more pressure in terms of being toned and fit, especially there's like a massive new trend of, you know, having that body that, you know, Dwayne Johnson body or
No, but it is. It's that kind of narrow waist, broad shoulders,
right.
Big
the V
bicep,
shape.
The V shape.
Right.
And, you know, just going to the supermarket, we know we see fashion magazines for women, but we also see a huge number of fitness magazines for men. And that's very confronting to be, you know, see these kind of bare chested guys, the arms out, the big, you know, abs, lose weight. You know, it's actually a much more kind of powerful message in terms of magazine covers than I think a lot of the fashion magazines are, which have been traditionally much more criticized from a women's point of view. So men are definitely not exempt from this. Now, going back to the topic of pressure coming from the parents, Vimal has been on the text line. You can join the conversation, ask any questions of us this afternoon, 4001, or you can send us a message for absolutely free on Dubai iMessenger app, or give us a call, 04-43-1010. And don't feel like you have to put your name or your real name on that message. Vimal is asking, every time I see my parents, they comment on my weight. I've gained 10 kilos over the last few years from having kids, not having the time to work out, etc. But their criticisms just make me more unhappy about it. How can I tell them to back off?
You know, one of the most important things to do is to be open and honest with your parents and tell them that while they are shaming you and they're making you feel bad, they're actually hurting your chances of helping yourself, because instead of building you up and encouraging you to maybe get a little bit more healthy, what they're doing is they're criticizing and hurting your self-esteem and your feelings of self-worth. And that won't motivate you to go back into, you know, exercising and taking care of yourself and maybe help them figure out better ways to approach you, because sometimes as parents get older, they tend to get set in their ways.
She said diplomatically.
Yes. And so when they're set in their ways, they don't really understand the new sort of trend of empathetic speech patterns, active listening, those kinds of things. But they will be receptive to understanding how to help you more. So talk to them and tell them, you know, instead, I'd prefer if you said something like, you know, you look a little bit better than you did the last time. I'm happy to see that you're changing what you're doing to help yourself, like health-wise. So they may not be encouraging you, say, you look great, you look amazing and everything's perfect, but they are sort of encouraging you by saying, whatever you're doing, do more of.
And it's more about an empowering message, I guess. It can be very hard, though, and certainly in certain cultures and nationalities, to have an open discussion when it comes to respect between the generations, and sometimes maybe just having to sit back and take what they're saying. And hopefully your self-worth is strong enough, Amal, that you can build that up on your own, so you're feeling a bit better equipped when it does come to seeing your parents, that it doesn't affect you as much. What do you think the difference between kind of self-worth and self-esteem is?
So actually, they're quite intertwined. Self-esteem is the idea of what is it that we look within ourselves and say, what gives us the sense of accomplishment? What gives us a sense of happiness within ourselves? So what values do I assign to myself? And am I sort of living up to those values? And how do those values inform me about what I think about myself? So what is my judgment of my own self? And so that's your self-esteem. Your self-worth, self-esteem is part of self-worth, as in, do I feel that I am worthy enough to either get the things that I want, to deserve the things that I deserve, to be happy? So it's almost like a piggyback to self-esteem. So self-esteem really focuses on your own judgment of yourself, whereas self-worth looks at how much you're judging your worth in terms of the things that you deserve in your life, and not things by possessions. I mean, things isn't just your achievements, your accomplishments.
Yeah, kind of value systems as well. So if you do have poor self-image and you body shame yourself, how can that affect your overall self-worth and the way you navigate the world? It sounds like it can have a really negative impact on your confidence across the board. So relationships, jobs, and social interactions even.
Quite significantly, absolutely so. I mean, when we look at our own body image, if we're shaming ourselves, we're basically telling ourselves implicitly that we don't deserve praise. We don't deserve to accept who we are as who we are. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't, and this is what we're, the negative thought patterns that we have, is that we shouldn't look at ourselves and be happy with who we are. So this is what we're telling ourselves when we have that negative body image. Thus, that can definitely affect how we, our confidence when we interact with people, our confidence when we think we can achieve certain things. So all of that sort of spreads over, and it tends to get generalized into a lack of self-confidence, self-worth, and self-esteem in many different aspects of your life.
So it could be really limiting people's kind of movements through the world if it comes to putting yourself forward for a promotion or going into a situation where you need to do more presentations or you need to be more kind of people facing. If you're not happy about how you look or you feel vulnerable that people might pass judgment on how you look, you could be closing yourself to all sorts of different opportunities.
Of course. And the word shame, really, like you have to sort of split it in two places, because the word shame originally also has to do with an evaluation of your own self, usually very negative. But the second part to it has to do with the confusion as to why you allow other people's opinions about you, or the negative sort of pressure that you're putting on yourself to affect you so much. Mm-hmm. And that factor is really what makes it more shameful rather than the guilt feeling that would exist if it was just, you know, something that you felt bad about. If somebody said something to you, you felt bad about it. But the shame comes from that. There's like this innate confusion as to why am I letting these people get to me? Why am I letting pressure get to me? Whereas this is something that really within myself, I don't have a problem with.
Whereas I think for many people, myself included, the body shame can come from seeing a photo or a video or seeing something of yourself, and that gives you that really difficult emotional discomfort of, I don't like how that looks and I wish I had the confidence to not feel like that. Mm-hmm. But I've been conditioned over decades to feel like I am not good enough in the world. Luke's been in touch on the topic of men, saying, as a teenager, I found it impossible to gain weight. All my friends were these big, hairy, muscular guys, and I looked like a 12-year-old next to them. I never had a girlfriend and felt left behind. It wasn't until my late 20s that I started to accept how I look, and now I can eat anything without gaining weight, which I'm very happy about. Which just is going to show it that men are very much affected by this, and it can be a case of wanting to gain weight and perhaps not knowing how to do it. And obviously, you know, we're now confronted by many different diet fads, but we're also confronted by very different body trends over the years. Now it's the kind of the Instagram body that we, you know, see and hear so much about, is this thin waist, the kind of thicker bum, thick thighs, the kind of strong, healthy look. And that seems to be and all of them can be equally unrealistic for people across the generations. This ideal of, you know, the perfect body shape is not a new thing. The body shape just seems to be changing as we go through the years. Join the conversation. Lots of questions coming in for Dr. Thoraya, and we'd love to help you this afternoon. And of course, you don't need to put your name on that if you'd prefer not to. When we come back, we're answering your questions. Joined in the studio this afternoon by Dr. Thuraya, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And we're talking about body shaming this afternoon. According to a survey from the US, March this year, 93% of women and 83% of men reported being body shamed. Very interesting statistic. Just goes to show we're all affected. And no doubt we've all been body shamed at some point and may well have done a bit of body shaming ourselves. Joining us online is Ray. Good afternoon.
Hey there, how are you?
Good, thank you. So tell me, Ray, have you ever been body shamed?
Yes, I have. I have been body shamed, and mostly by my own self.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we said earlier. You know, we tend to say things to ourselves that we would never say, we would never dream of saying to anybody else. But that internal monologue can be so damaging. What would you like to add to the conversation this afternoon, Ray?
Well, I just wanted to put it out there for everyone listening that, you know, I've heard some talk that you should accept some things that you cannot change, and there's some things you should not accept. So I just wanted to put my opinion out there that you have to accept that there's some things you cannot change, like your height, maybe mm-hmm. your skin color, or things like that. But you do not have to accept things that you can change. Like maybe if you feel you have a weight issue, you can change that. Maybe if you feel like you have a mild skincare issue, you can change. There's some things you have control over, and you should never really give up.
And also, you know, you can't control what people are going to say to you, but you can control what you say to yourself and how you react to people's comments and perhaps criticism as well. So, as you say, it's about taking control. And that's not to say you have to change your weight if it doesn't conform to society's expectations. But if you are truly unhappy, or if there is a health issue, there are some things you have got control over, as you rightly say.
Absolutely. I just feel that, like you said very well, that you have control over the things you tell yourself. And using that, you can tell yourself, you know, to make the changes that you want. I lost about 25 kilos.
Wow.
Because I was very unhappy with my weight. And one day I told myself, today you will stop body shaming yourself and you will start telling yourself that you can change and you will change. And the power of positive thinking really got me through that.
How do you feel about your self-image now, Ray?
Well, I will say that I'm not 100% okay with it, but 95% is still very, very good.
Good. Do you think you'll ever be 100%? Do you think anybody is 100% happy?
You know what? Sometimes I get stuck on my social media and I see people who I feel like they are at 100%. So I will maintain my goal, you know, to always try to reach a better state. But I have stopped beating myself up over it.
Good. That's fantastic to hear, Ray. Thank you so much for joining us on Dubai today. Cheers.
You too.
Some questions coming in for you, Dr. Thuraya. No name on this one, asking, I have two daughters. One is tall, broad and plump. The other is skinny, short and very petite. The petite one actually eats way more than the other. It's just the way they are. Well, I always try my best to never body shame every time we visit our in-laws. They'll be like, oh, you're a big girl, you're getting heavy. And to the other one, oh, you're so tiny, why don't you eat? So my effort comes totally apart with comments like this, not from strangers, but from people that kids trust. What can I do? I've already tried explaining to them, but it's always the first thing that will come out of their mouths when they see their girls. It's a really difficult one, Dr. Thuraya.
It is, because especially when you have in-laws and even your own parents, it's hard to tell them that these things actually affect people and how they feel within themselves if you continuously bring up body image and mm-hmm. and things like that.
And the comparison there between the two is really challenging.
Absolutely. And this goes a little bit back to what Ray was saying a little bit before when he said there's some things that you can control, but this is a perfect example of things that you can't control. Mm-hmm. If you have one who's very tall, she's broad, she's plump, where the other one's skinny, short and petite, but she eats so much more than the other person. Because the reality is, and I think this is where the stigma of body shaming comes into play, is that people think that we can control our weight, where actually at times we can't. Mm-hmm. There's some people who suffer from many different physical disorders, physical diseases, things like thyroidism, hyperthyroidism, hypothyroidism, PCOS, which is polycystic ovary syndrome. All of these things can affect a person's weight without them even eating what people think they're eating. So what people think we are in control of, actually, we're not that much in control of. There are some things that, yes, you can control, but then other parts, you know, biology sort of really takes over. And in this kind of situation, what I would suggest is, if you can't control your in-laws, then talk to your girls, share with them, and ask them how they feel every time something like this happens. Ask them what they experienced, what they were going through. Let them talk it out and explain to them that, you know, that your in-laws are just sort of like that because they don't really know what else to say, maybe. Mm-hmm. But if your in-laws won't change, at least create an open dialogue between you and your daughters and allow them to really share and open up, and let them eventually decide whether or not they want to be around their in-laws when that kind of thing happens, or their grandparents.
And as you said, kind of boosting them, and also really fostering an environment where it's not one is right and one is wrong.
Right.
One, you know, plump is bad and petite is, you know, absolutely not. It's really about emphasizing that everybody and everybody is different.
Mm-hmm.
Shazley's joining us on the line now. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, dear.
How are you? How can we help this afternoon?
Well, I just wanted to mention something also, because I'm all for not putting people down for their weight. But I think, as far as a parent is concerned, I think it's our job, I believe that I need to let my daughters know mm-hmm. that they need to stay fit and healthy and not be overweight because of society. It's all good and fine in theory that say, oh, they'll love you for who you are. But you as a woman and me as a woman, we know that's not what life is all about. It is your image. And I don't mean just in terms of having a boyfriend or a husband. I mean, even in a corporate world, the way you look affects your future. So it's all good and fine to say, oh, love your body the way it is, and the parents or the grandparents shouldn't tell you you're fat or overweight. But I think it's important that some sort of a notice should be given to children, especially female, not as much the male, because it's the society, the way they perceive women and men are different. But it does affect the female's future, a child's future, if she's a heavy, overweight child and grows up to be a heavy, overweight woman. It affects her social life, it will affect her career, and that's very, very important. You know, again, all good and fine not to body shame, but I think we've gone completely to a different spectrum. Say, oh, everything's okay.
So your and emphasis should so really what you're saying is we need to be emphasizing the health factor. What would happen if you had a daughter, as you're saying, you feel it's more important for women, not for men? How would you speak to your daughter then if you felt she was gaining weight and you felt she needed to lose that, Shazley?
I wish I knew how to do it the right way, because I do have a child, and I know that she feels very, very uncomfortable if she gains weight and stuff. But I've seen it, and also in her friends. I don't know the best approach. I guess it has to do with the child's personality, whether or not they need to be, I would personally just mention to her that it's about her future. I would tell her the reality of life.
How do you feel about your own body image, Shazley?
I'm very happy with who I am. I am overweight, but I am happy with who I am, because I'm in a position in my life where I don't need to look into my career or husband or such things. And I like being who I am, and I don't really care what the rest of the world thinks.
Could you not argue that your daughter could be very happy in the way that she is? Are you saying she's uncomfortable?
Not be, because
you don't know that.
But I live in a corporate world. I personally live in a corporate world, and I know how the corporate world works. I know how the real world works. When you go to a club or a social gathering, it doesn't matter how wonderful your personality is. It doesn't matter what a great sense of humor you have or how well-read you are. The first thing the opposite sex or the same sex, whichever may be the case, sees is how you look. If you don't look good, they don't approach you. I mean, that's the simple fact of life. And I remember my sister-in-law telling me years ago when I was young, and I was in the chubby stage of, you know, teenage years where I hadn't quite gotten in shape. And she said, it's exactly the same. It doesn't matter how wonderful your personality is. If you don't look good, nobody's going to talk to you, or nobody's going to deal with you. And that's reality. I mean,
can I step in for a second, just because I think it might be It's a little overwhelming, the things that you're saying, and not in a negative state, but just because I think, you know, you said something that was really important. You said, I'm happy with who I am, even though I'm overweight. And then when, you know, when Helen said, well, don't you think your daughter could feel the same? You said, no, she can't. Well, actually, she can. And it really, what she's going to learn is what you model for her. Because when you said, you know, people will love you, you know, they'll look at you for what you look like and they'll love you for who you are. It's incorrect. People will approach you for what you look like, but they'll love you for who you are. That's one of the most important things that you need to remind yourself.
And I understand that, but as a teenager and a woman who's going into the corporate world, you know, in their 20s and stuff, I'm in my late 40s, so I've done my corporate world. That's why I'm happy. I'm not looking for a brand new job. I'm not looking for a husband. I'm not looking to make more money to move into the real world of business. But for somebody who's getting into it at a young age, it is important.
Actually, it's not as important as you think it is, to be honest. And I think this is the misconception that a lot of people have when it comes to, in reality, what you're doing is body shaming. Because the reality is that all statistics and all research will show us the number one thing that is by far the most attractive for men in women is not what they look like, it's their confidence. And if you can build that confidence in your daughter, regardless of what she looks like, she will be the star of the room no matter where she is. But if you tell her that the only thing that is going to attract men is her looks, she will grow up to believe that. And she will not...
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's the only thing, but I'm saying it is important. I'm not saying that.
But it's not the only thing. It's not as important.
I agree with you. It's right. Important to be educated, to be well-rounded, have a good personality. All of that counts. Don't take me wrong. I am not saying you have to be skinny or you're going to have a miserable life. But I think it's also important that as a parent, that parents need to let their children know that it is important for them.
It's important for the kids to be healthy. Not important for them to focus on their body weight. It's just healthy.
Shazly, I'm really sorry. We need to leave it there. We're going to a break, but thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts. Really, really appreciate it. When we come back, more of your questions. We are talking about body shaming here this afternoon on the Couch. I'm joined by Dr. Thuraya from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. She's a clinical psychologist and here to offer emotional support to anyone in need, as well as offer her expert insights. She's worked with a really diverse client base, including women with eating disorders, children with learning disabilities, and also the depressed, schizophrenics, all sorts of issues, here with you until 2 o'clock. So do get in touch with your questions or concerns. Perhaps you're worried about someone in your family. Perhaps you've been the victim of body shaming and need some advice on bolstering your confidence and dealing with people who are criticizing you. We've got Samir joining us on the line. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Samir?
Fine, thank you.
How can we help? What would you like to add to our body shaming conversation?
Yeah. The thing is that I just would like to add a few points. The lady just now, Ashley, who just now called.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was just sharing a conversation. And I would like to say that what she was trying to convey is that looking good, okay, I'm just telling that if you have a good personality, it gives you an edge. That's what she was, I think, so trying to add, you know. Means, of course, your confidence, the way you speak and your attributes and all that really matters, of course. At the long term, of course, you're beginning to like the person. But at the first instance, when you look at a person, you know, that gives you an edge. I'm not saying that I believe in this. I believe that what the inner beauty of a person is, that is what is all that matters.
But so you're saying that while you don't agree with the fact that you believe that this is a reality in our society today.
This is a reality, yeah. Because I don't like this system. I don't like that people only prefer the people who are good looking. But in reality, that is what takes place in place like Dubai. I don't know other parts of the world. But I've also worked in Dubai, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what that lady was trying to convey, she's to some extent, because I know you are a good person. I am a good person. We all believe in inner beauty. We believe that what a person really is in his personality, that really matters. But there are not other people who actually believe, you know, many of them in a place like Dubai.
How do you feel about your own self-worth and self-body image, Samir? Where are you at on that scale at the moment?
I'm fine. I'm 6'2", and I'm okay, you know. It's not like that I have any problems with that. But I experienced that thing around me. You know, I've been around with other men mm-hmm. who work with me. You know, and they are actually really shallow. It's not good. You know, it's not a thing. I agree. I'm not shallow. I know. I look into the woman for who she is and what she does not look like. I never give that importance. I'm also overweight myself. But then there are other men who are simply so shallow. And I find that majority of the men are like this only over here in Dubai. And they are at higher posts. And they will only prefer women who are only good looking, who don't have any attributes, who have not good qualification. But only once they just look good in their full photo, they will look nice.
In the full photo. I think we'll be talking on this about this later, is in the importance of teaching our children about body image, feeling good about themselves, and also the importance of not judging those around us. So that does speak to a really important point. Thank you so much for joining us on the phone. Really appreciate your comments, Samir. Okay. Now, lots of questions coming in for you, Dr. Thuraya. One from Nicola here saying, my 12-year-old daughter is confident, sporty, friendly and generally lovely. However, she is going through puberty and I now hear her talking about how fat she is. She isn't. She does have some puppy fat and I'm sure it will go as she grows taller, and it upsets me to hear her say the word fat about herself. What is the best advice?
You know, puberty and adolescence is possibly the worst combination for
rough
humanity.
Time.
It should never have happened at the same time. However, you know, it's normal that when a person is changing their body, especially during the time of puberty, that people are starting to look at themselves and compare themselves, especially in the adolescent years, to other students who maybe have or have not hit puberty yet. Mm-hmm. So she's looking at her body and she's saying, well, my friend doesn't have this here and my friend doesn't have that, or she has this and I don't have that. So the comparison is natural for it to happen. And I know as a parent, your automatic knee-jerk reaction is, I need to save her from thinking like this. I don't want her to feel bad.
Exactly. I want to stop her pain.
Right. I want to make it go away.
Exactly.
But it's okay that she's experiencing that. Instead, try to build her resilience, try to build her confidence in other ways so that she focuses more on herself rather than on the way that she looks, as well as emphasize the idea of health versus looks of the body. So, and encourage her and teach her that her body's going to continue changing. You know, usually more often than not, statistics will show that men's bodies will change up until the age of 21, whereas women's bodies will change up until the age of 18, 19. So she has at least a 6-7 more years for the body to adjust. And if she's unhappy with something, don't dismiss it. Mm-hmm. Talk to her and say, okay, what is it that you're unhappy with? And let's see what way we can work around it in a healthy and productive way so that we don't move down a path that can be maladaptive or dysfunctional for her.
Muzmil saying on the message line, short men are body shamed for being short by more women than men. And that is an interesting point in terms of height and men. And that's something that we hear again time and time again when it comes to things like internet dating. Men lying about their height, women lying about their weight, women lying about their age. You know, so it's definitely something, it doesn't discriminate. It really doesn't.
Also, something that was really interesting about Samir, when you asked him about how he feels about himself, the first thing he went to was height.
Yeah.
He said, I'm 6'2". So he's basically showing what, in general, men would like to show is this idea of I'm this tall because I have this kind of, especially that gives them a sense of posture and stature as well.
We're joined now quickly with Alex. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Alex. What have you got to say on the topic of body shaming?
Well, I feel, connecting to the lady who spoke earlier, mm-hmm. that I disagree with some of her points because, like, the way she phrases that, oh, well, she's overweight and she's happy, and so she should not, like, continue working or whatever. Good for her that she's feeling happy, but it might cause a disconnect for her daughter because if she constantly tells her daughter, okay, you should, well, maybe lose weight or get fit or something, while herself being not fit, the daughter might think, like, well, then why should I try if my mm-hmm. mom's already kind of not in shape? Like, what's the point? Like, look, she's happy at her older age where she's technically successful. And, you know, it means I can be happy fat. And then at the same time, the mom will say, well, no, you should not look like me. It's like it would kind of cause a mental...
Bit confusing.
Yeah, but because I can say for myself, like, for when I was a kid, everybody, like, not maybe family, friends would say, oh, I was too skinny because I was a skinny kid. Then I gained weight and it's now more like a, oh, well, you should lose weight. And, for example, sometimes it's said from my father, who's himself overweight, or my mom, who's on the slimmer side. So it's like, well, can you? You're telling me to get into this specific shape when you're yourself not really there. It's like it's hard to kind of, you know, get what you should be like, basically, and have that full body confidence.
So a good, really good point, that Alex, about kind of modeling good behavior and being healthy for our children as well as ourselves. Really, really appreciate that. Cheers, Alex. Do stay with us. When we come back, we are talking about body dysmorphic disorder, and we're also answering some of your questions. Some great ones here coming to you after this. Joined in the studio by Dr. Thuraya. She's here from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic as a clinical psychologist, here to offer some emotional support and some expert insights on the topic of body shaming. Have you been body shamed? Have you been known to maybe body shame yourself and maybe not even realize it? If you need some advice for your own self-confidence, or maybe to help deal with a family member, get in touch. Message here saying, if you look good but your self-confidence is damaged, you won't even know it. Dr. Thuraya?
I think that's by far the best theme for the whole show today, because ultimately, you know, there are a lot of women that look great but don't have the confidence.
And men.
And men, of course, and men. And what ends up happening is that they end up in relationships, in coupled relationships, that are actually very emotionally abusive. And that's because they don't believe in themselves. And I know that, you know, the previous lady, the previous caller, and Samir, they were both saying things like, you know, but that's important too. Yeah, but you can't deny that they go hand in hand. So if you are constantly badgering or talking about a person's weight, you can't build their confidence that way. So when you don't focus on a person's weight, you focus on their health and all of their other qualities, you build confidence enough that their looks will no longer be important. And that is the truth. And I know offhand that when you look at a person, the looks are the first thing that you catch. And I agree with that. And I know that in the corporate world also, what you see is the first thing that you evaluate. However, that only works for the first 5 seconds. Because if you stand there looking good, but the words that you're saying that come out of your mouth are pointless, then nobody's going to respect you. So 5 seconds is not enough to base your life on.
And isn't it true that when you might meet someone and not be initially attracted to them, the more you get to know them, the more you perceive their looks to be?
Absolutely.
It can go up and down. You can meet someone who is, you know, on paper the most, you know, statistically stunning person, but if they've got an ugly heart, they lose all of that attractiveness.
Absolutely.
And vice versa. Message here, very much in agreement with you, Dr. Thuraya. Shocked by the mindset of that caller. Mothers of daughters need to instill self-confidence in them and stress the importance of being healthy and happy rather than sowing the seeds of insecurity about looking a certain way to attract attention. Also saying, can I just comment on how contradictory the lady on the phone was? She said it's okay to be overweight for her but not her daughter. I suggest she gets a reality check and perhaps she has some insecurity issues of her own. Do get in touch to add your voice to the conversation. We've got a caller on the phone. Hello, who's there?
Hi, my name is Anthony.
Hi, Anthony. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for joining us. What would you like to say on the topic of body shaming?
To be fair, I mean, some time back, I was doing a master's in marketing, and we had this class where we were actually given two sets of pictures. And the first question, before we were asked to actually look at the pictures, we were asked, like, how would a man be, an ideal man be? And we were given this set of pictures, pretty much like the perfect man of most of the guys, or the people would like to define, well-groomed, well-dressed, and so on. And we kind of nodded our heads to say, yeah, this is the guy, or this is the person, and we kind of pretty much picked up certain pictures. Probably 5 minutes later, this person actually asked us, do you really think people are like that? And then we were given a different set of pictures where it was not necessarily well-groomed, not necessarily the well-maintained body, if you like, and pretty much a lot of flaws. And we said, well, this is what we are, and this is what we want to be, but this is not, we cannot necessarily say it out and open. And then she was kind of reflecting on it, saying that it's all a part of your subconscious and the culture that we've been brought up with. We've been told that you need to be X amount of height and X amount of weight and so on. I understand there's a concept of, or rather, there's this idea that you need to maintain, which is health, which is necessary. Mm-hmm. So you need to actually kind of follow, sometimes if you are a little overweight, you need to follow diet and stuff. But overall, what I was trying to say is that in our movies, and there's a huge debatable topic, which is like, certain characters or certain people misrepresented, certain minorities are not represented, and there are obviously people who have been whitewashed or blackwashed or however you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the best example would be Black Panther, which has come out recently.
Mm-hmm.
But it all kind of forms as a child, as a person who is growing up. It all forms the part of their subconscious where they kind of try and attach, oh yeah, I want to be probably David Beckham or Ronaldo, and I need to have his muscles and so on. And you kind of follow it from there.
I think that's absolutely right. And in terms of the images that you're bombarded with from Hollywood, from Bollywood, magazines and social media, studies have shown in the US only 5% of people in America actually have the body type that we are confronted by across media. So what we're actually seeing is not representative of the people around us or what we see when we look in the mirror. And we're kind of fighting the impossible fight there. So it's better to focus on what we can control, which is, you know, us as individuals and how we interact with the world around us, and hopefully the kindness that we show others by not judging and not shaming. So, Anthony, thank you so much for joining our conversation this afternoon. Appreciate it. Have a great afternoon. Cheers. No name on this text, 4001, if you'd like to ask a question or get in touch using the app. Saying, hi, I'm a relatively thin person, 48 years old, and I think I have a kind of eating disorder because I tend not to eat as much as everyone expects me to. I'm strong and I do lots of workouts, heavy workouts, but it's been pointed out a few times that I don't eat much and my plate is always empty. I'm not sure if that is a disorder. In the back of my mind, I think I hate getting fat and that's why I don't eat much. Do you think I could start doing anything by myself, or should I go to the doctor?
I think in this case, it might be beneficial for you to visit a doctor first, just to make sure, because ultimately, you know, you need to do some blood tests, just make sure that everything's okay health wise, and then you can take it from there.
Hope that helps. Message here. Any tips, please? My husband has put on weight in the last 12 months with a hugely stressful job. I realize I'm body shaming him, but I've been genuinely worried about his health. How do you practically help? P.S. He knows his belly is out of control.
If he knows his belly is out of control, the last thing that you want to do is bring it back up over and over again. And I think one of the ways that can help, because obviously if he has a stressful job, that means he's emotionally eating. That means he's sort of trying to quiet down the pain that he's feeling or the stress that he's going through. So instead of discussing it over and over again, try to do something practical with him. So if you think he isn't able to exercise or he's not motivated enough to go to the gym, go with him. Tell him, let's go for a walk. Let's go here. Let's do something together. Let's go play a golf game. Or
yeah, have a hobby together.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Let's do something. So this way you're promoting his health without necessarily sort of nagging and sort of saying, you know, you're not, you don't look good. You're not, you know, look at your belly, you're gaining weight since you started this job, you know, these kind of things. So instead of going down that route, just adjust yourself with him and try to do things a little bit more centered with him so that he can feel connected to you, connected to himself, and connected to his health.
Hope that helps. The message asking about kids. How can we teach our children not to indulge uselessly in food to compensate for being bored, sleepy, or having high emotions?
That's a very good question, because emotional eating not only happens in children, but also in adults.
I'd love some advice myself on this one, Dr. Thryer.
Actually, there are so many different coping strategies that could be helpful, but it really depends on the person. So there's no cookie cutter solution for each person. Some people, they like to paint. Some people, they like to go out and do something active. Some people, they like to listen to music, watch a funny movie. Some people like to read a book. So it really depends. But giving them different coping strategies and having them try out different ones. There's a great list of different coping strategies online that you can find, and just have the child sort of go through it together. Or you can go through it with them, sometimes suggesting fun things to do, but not necessarily in the sense of like keeping them busy, but just something that brings the family together. It can also be beneficial, because sometimes when a child is emotionally eating, it's not just because they're bored. It's usually because they're feeling a sort of emptiness, and that emptiness usually stems from disconnection.
Staying on topic of kids, no name on this message, saying specific phrases to say would be greatly appreciated. My daughter is 6 and I tried explaining to her that the part of the brain that signals sleepiness also signals hunger. And if she's already had her dinner and still feeling hungry, she's actually sleepy. This explanation is not convincing her and she keeps asking for more food. What should I do?
I'd first like to know what kind of food is she looking for as well, because sometimes children need a little bit more food. Sometimes they're thirsty instead. Sometimes, you know, maybe they just want to drink some water. And so It's a hard question to answer without really knowing more information. But what I would say is, before you assume that this has to do with sleepiness and not hunger, actual hunger, I would suggest go see your pediatric doctor, not podiatrist, but your pediatric doctor, just to make sure, because at times there can be other things that are there that you might be assuming has to do with sleepiness and hunger. Okay. Versus hunger.
Hope that helps. Jane's been in touch saying, I think the world has gone crazy promoting love yourself when a person is too overweight. I see it with the aging population where I travel. The legs, knees of these people beginning to have major problems, and the health problems they're setting themselves up for are crazy. Appropriate body weight must be promoted. It's a fine line in the teenage years. I've had to navigate it with a petite daughter. On another note, look at the height of the last presidents of the USA, all over 6 foot. But what I think is a really interesting and very valid point there is, we have got this body positivity movement going on. So all over Instagram, women who are considered plus size, and that can be open to interpretation, but in terms of fashion, so over a kind of US 12, UK 16, coming forward and saying, you know, I love myself, I'm not going to lose weight for anybody. But the downside to this, and I think this is fair comment, although it is my opinion as well, is you do have women who are at a very unhealthy weight. And that's not, and it's not about saying I love myself, I don't need to lose weight to make me stop loving myself, but there needs to be healthy parameters around this and about being positive role models.
Absolutely. I agree with Jane in the sense that we're not promoting that just whatever weight actually, it's not even the weight, it's whatever health you are, just yes. Go ahead and love yourself. That's not the point here. The point is, if you are healthy, and I stress the word healthy because it doesn't matter what you look like as long as you're healthy. Mm-hmm. If your vital signs are good, if your vitamins are good, if you're not overweight in terms of your BMI, if you're not putting any risk to your heart, to your liver, to your kidneys, to your system, then there's no reason for you not to love yourself. But if there is, then definitely you need to do something about it, because ultimately, as we get older, our metabolism goes down, you know, our health goes down.
A bit less forgiving.
Exactly. And so we have to account for what's coming later, mm-hmm. as well. We can't just think of where we are right now. We need to account and think of what's going to happen in our future. So plan for looking and feeling healthy then, but right now.
Okay, I'll do that.
I need to do that as well.
Yeah, tell me about it. When we come back, we're answering more of your questions and getting on the topic of how body shaming and so many other cultural and societal factors can lead to body dysmorphia. Talking about body shaming this afternoon, I'm joined in the studio by Dr. Thuraya, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. Lots of calls, lots of comments, and lots of questions coming in for you, Dr. Thuraya. If you would like to add your voice to the conversation, Mark saying, I don't think there's any excuse for fat, overweight children. Parents of overweight children should be ashamed of themselves. At the end of the day, the parent is responsible for their child's nutrition and health. You don't have to be skinny, but heavily overweight people only have themselves to blame. And a question here, no name on this one, saying, hi, my 6-year-old boy is really thin, but he eats well and he's very active. I'm not worried about him at all. Lately, he's been coming to me and asking if he looks fat and wants to eat less because he doesn't want a belly like his dad. I don't know what to say to him. Any advice there, Dr. Thuraya?
Well, you know, it's natural for children to compare themselves to other individuals around them and then, you know, worry about certain things that they see. So maybe don't put too much emphasis on it in the beginning, even though I know the instinct is, oh my God, what's he saying? And I need to take care of this. Just wait it out. See if this is something that's recurring. So if it is something that's recurring, you can address it with him later on. But for now, just let this one slide, mm-hmm. and then see where he takes it.
Okay. Now, we're also talking about body dysmorphia this afternoon. What is it?
So body dysmorphic disorder is actually a disorder in the psychological handbook for us, where we talk about the idea of picking out one part of your body or a couple of parts of your body. And the focus is on those parts of your body in a way that go against what is reality. So you have a distorted image of what is happening in your body. So for instance, you could have body dysmorphia with the fact that either you're overweight and where you're not, or it could be something that your nose is really big, your arms are really flabby, but there's so much emphasis on it. There's so much obsession with it.
So when you look in the mirror, that's all that you can see.
Absolutely. And you do everything possible in order to rectify it. And it could actually be there, but it could be a very slight, for the lack of a better word, I'm thinking defect in the mm-hmm. in the body, but it's just something that you may not necessarily be happy with. Something really small, but for you, it becomes the focus and the emphasis of everything that you do, either exercising, body creams, hiding things. You know, sometimes people will like wear hats to hide certain areas of their face or certain their ears, you know, things like that. So it's really the idea of picking out one or a few body features and making them the focus, and avoiding social situations or avoiding certain situations just to avoid anyone actually saying something or possibly looking at the area that
so
you are
really
self-conscious
getting
about.
Into the area of anxiety and paranoia as well then.
Well, it's not, I mean, the anxiety can definitely come from the thought of having that. Mm. It's not so much paranoia, whereas it's just an overemphasis of something that's very distorted in your mind. It's very similar to anorexia in general, in the sense that those that suffer with anorexia look at their body and see someone who's very fat. So there's a distorted image in their mind. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing in that sense when it comes to body dysmorphia, is that they're looking at that defect in a very distorted way. So it becomes something that's a lot worse than what is the reality.
So it becomes all consuming, really.
Right.
So in terms of signs and symptoms, what could people be looking for if they think that could be recognized in a friend or family member or even in themselves?
It's usually a topic of concern consistently. So it's something that a person will bring up all the time and will do so many different things in order to make sure that they can either hide it or they can take care of it. So things like camouflaging, comparing one's body to another, seeking different types of surgeries, avoiding mirrors, excessive grooming, excessive exercising. So all of those are signs and symptoms, but it's also within conversation. So it'll be, you know, if I see you, Helen, I'm always like, oh, you know, my arms are so flabby. And you know, Helen, last time I saw you, you see my arms, are they flabbier or worse or better than
what I would call mentionitis?
Mentionitis. I think that's a perfect word for it.
The technical term.
Yes, mentionitis.
And it's a medical condition.
Yes, absolutely. It's a psychological disorder. Absolutely.
And are there any anxieties or conditions that it can go hand in hand with?
Absolutely. So it can definitely be comorbid with a generalized anxiety disorder or even other eating disorders, as well as a major depressive disorder.
Jen on the text line saying, I've hated my breasts since I was 12 and have booked surgery for over the summer. I'm scared but excited. I've had comments about being flat chested over the years, but nothing worse than the things I've said to myself. I wish I could love myself how I am, but I'm feeling hugely liberated by the fact I can make this difference. And as you say, surgery can be a real sanity saver for so many people when self-confidence is so intrinsically linked mm-hmm. to how you look and how you feel about how you look. I think it's an important point is that you're going into it with a balanced mind and you're going in well-informed. And I wish there was more kind of psychological support around surgeries to make sure people are feeling comfortable about it in that respect.
Actually, there is a new trend amongst a lot of different cosmetic centers, as well as even bariatric centers, where they will not allow you to continue with the surgery unless you first see a psychologist and go through an evaluation or go through a psychiatric evaluation, because they want to make sure that there aren't any other issues that mm-hmm. are underlying that. Because yes, sometimes people just want to change their body, they want to do something different. But if you go in with a balanced mindset, when you acknowledge that you have other great qualities, when your self-esteem is in a good place, that's not necessarily always a bad thing. But when you go in with such low self-esteem that nothing about yourself is good in your opinion, and you don't seem to give yourself any kind of credit, you come out of that surgery and then you go back in for another one, and then yeah. you come out and you go in for another one.
Or you go in with the highest of expectations
right.
that this one surgery is going to solve
absolutely.
All of your problems and complete you and make you happy. I think that's a really interesting point when it comes to things like the bariatric or gastric band, because often it's not the size of the stomach, it's not what you're eating. It's the psychological issues about why you're eating in the first place that need to be addressed from a psychological point of view. Questions coming in for Dr. Thryer. We're here until 2 o'clock this afternoon, so get yours in. More of your questions after this. Joined by Dr. Thryer, clinical psychologist at the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, here to offer some insights and expertise if you've got any concerns or questions around the topic of body shaming and body dysmorphia disorder. Some big topics this afternoon. We know some of these aspects are very sensitive, so if you would like to ask a question and don't want to put your name on it, that's absolutely fine. 4001 on the text line. You can message us for free on the Dubai iMessenger app, and you're more than welcome to give us a call as well. No name on this question, Dr. Thryer. My in-laws give a lot of value to and seek happiness through candy. They offer the same for my daughter, and every time I try to fix this by re-explaining to her that candy is not natural and not healthy because it has added chemicals. I've explained to them not to offer her candy, but with all good intentions, they don't seem to agree with me, and they give her one candy in the morning and one in the afternoon. Should I just try and let it go and get over it? Family dynamics.
Such a beautiful thing. I would suggest, if you want to find a proper middle ground at this point, maybe just give your in-laws healthy candy and ask them to just give your daughter that candy instead.
Just replace it.
Yeah, just replace it with the healthy stuff. And so if they really want to give lots of value and seek happiness through
food
the candy.
Food is love. Which was very much my grandmother's mantra. It was all about, you know, things being a treat, or, you know, and positioning themselves as the grandparent who's, you know, like the fun, and, you know, it's the lack of responsibility of, yep, I get to do all the fun bits of parenting, like the giving candy and the treats and the da-da-da, without thinking about the repercussions, which often can be a really nice sugar rush right before bedtime. So yeah, adjusting the candy that they give could be a really good step.
And because it's also very cultural as well. You know, there are a lot of cultures that food is love. And, you know, I come from two cultures that food is definitely love. So there, you know, you walk in and it's just eat, eat, eat until you're about to explode. But the food is always healthy food. Mm-hmm. So it's not about teaching children that food is bad for you. It's just how to do it, moderation, which foods to eat and which proper foods to eat. So if your in-laws are not big on not giving candy, just ask them to give the right type of candy.
Okay. Great message here. It's come in on the text line from Fatima saying, I actually blame the world that we live in, and it's not just Dubai, as someone mentioned earlier, because everything, or let's say almost everything from songs and shows like Miss Lebanon, magazines, are all about how we look and how we should look. Since when the colour of our skin, the type of hair we have, how tall or even how thin we are, can tell who we are and how beautiful we are. I'm not saying that it is not important, but I am saying that people are different, and that's what makes everyone unique and beautiful. As long as we are healthy, then that is all that matters.
You know, Helen, you said something really good last time, like in the last segment. You said 5% of the people actually are represented in Hollywood and magazines and things like that. And that's the reality of cultures as well. Mm-hmm. When the gentleman that was on the phone talked about whitewashing, it's really the reality. What we see in real life in terms of, you know, videos and shows and magazines are the 5%ers. But the rest of the world is filled with so many different cultures and so many different definitions of beauty that we don't get to see often. And so right now what we're trying to do is we're trying to shoot for a type of beauty that only exists in 5% of a very small population.
And often with all of the help of, you know, professional makeup artists, when it comes to images, photoshopping, filters, we're not seeing a true representation most of the time. Message here, no name on this one, asking if someone looks in the mirror and is unhappy with how they look and start working out, isn't that a good thing?
So it's a very quick question to a very complex answer. The reality is, if someone looks in the mirror and is unhappy with something that they see, but they feel whole as an individual, no, it's not a bad thing to want to change that. But when your identity is defined by only your looks, and you look in the mirror and you don't like what you see, then yes, it is a bad thing if you are trying to go to work out, because ultimately you're not going to achieve the sense of satisfaction that you're looking for. It's the same thing with going into surgery. Mm-hmm. Your expectation is that you're going to feel whole as soon as that one thing that you're looking at is resolved. But the reality is that your identity has to be split up, because that's ultimately who we are. Nobody wears one hat. We wear many hats. Helen, you wear a ton of hats.
I've got a very heavy head.
You wear a ton of hats. So if you lose one thing, or if there's something that you're not at, you know, what you want to be at, it's okay, because you have so much so many other things that define you. Mm-hmm. But when you're defined, or when you define yourself with just one thing, that can be soul crushing when you don't think you're living up to it.
Question here, which I think is really pertinent around the topic of teens. Question asking, how do you recognize body dysmorphia? My son, who is now 14, has never eaten much, is super sporty, and is now very focused on a show six pack. Also mentions he won't eat stuff that's not healthy. I had a discussion about looking good, and he said he sees no problem with taking steroids, etc. Big worry.
Well, that can be a big worry, definitely. And that sort of like leaps into the idea of muscle dysmorphia. And this, it's more a type of, it's a subtype of body dysmorphia that happens a lot with men more than women. Not only with men, but mostly with men. And it's basically this obsession about being small and undeveloped. So people are trying to become bigger and build more muscles and build a lot more body mass and tone it to what you would see the old Arnold Schwarzenegger type, yeah. Right? So, and this leads to like lifting weights, doing a lot of resistance training, things like exercising compulsively, but also even considering the ideas of taking steroids or other things that would contribute to that. So this is quite problematic. It's important to keep an eye on it, make sure that the fact that he eats healthy is not a bad thing. And the fact that he's sporty and he's like, he's enjoying his body, also not a bad thing. But like I said before, his identity can't be based solely on his six packs and his muscle building. It has to be more. So help develop his identity in different ways rather than focusing, especially as a teen. The last thing that you want to do is focus on something you're trying to change, because he'll focus on how to not listen to you. So the best thing to do is really allow him to re-identify and redefine himself into a more well-rounded person.
And as we touched on earlier, the ideal male body in pop culture is that kind of V-shaped torso, big arms, broad stomach, flat stomach, you know, kind of broad shoulders rather, small waist. Now, in one study, 9 out of 10 college-age men expressed a greater desire for muscularity. So this is, and yet another 90% of adolescent males reported exercising to look more muscular. 2/3 altered their diet to increase their muscle size or tone, and nearly 6% admitted to using steroids, which are now viewed as appearance enhancers rather than performance enhancers. Just goes to show that this is really shifting at a rate of knots. This message has got no name. It's asking, I've always been concerned about how I look, but now it's worse than ever. I've been to a few professionals over the years about the issue who have reassured me that I'm not ugly, and I've been given strategies to help deal with these thoughts. However, nothing actually works. I spend every day of my life mortified by my appearance. I'm so embarrassed, I find it difficult to function and lead a normal life. Is this body dysmorphia or genuine faulty appearance? I've tried explaining it to someone the other day. Telling myself I'm not ugly is like trying to convince myself that the sky is pink when I know it's blue. It's so distressing and I'm really struggling. Thanks in advance if you have any ideas or tips for what I can do.
Well, it definitely starts to sound like there are symptoms of body dysmorphia here. And when we talk about these kinds of disorders, sometimes medications are very helpful in helping change the rigidity of the distortion.
So how does that work in terms of medicating? How do the medicines work?
So in its specifics, ironically, we don't really know exactly how it works, but it does target the neurotransmitters that help with certain obsessions, with certain fixations. And so the medications will work on different neurotransmitters, like I said, in terms of like serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, and usually the psychiatrist will provide whatever is necessary. Now, at times, what we prefer is that it's coupled with proper therapy as well, because obviously medication alone isn't a fix, and even sometimes therapy alone isn't a fix. But research will tell us that both together will lead to much more successful prognosis than any other kind of treatment.
Okay, so it sounds like you do need to go and speak to somebody about that. Emma's been on the text line saying, this is why I don't let my daughters on social media like Instagram. All models, all photoshopped and all fiction. It's not fair on young minds. Dealing with the teens that you've been working with in the past, Dr. Thry, do you feel like social media is creating more problems than it's solving when it comes to expectations of body image?
Absolutely. And it's not just social media. It's even before, for us, it was magazines, right? So magazines were giving us a lot of, even TV shows, movies. I mean, some of the most beautiful women were in the movies in the 50s and the 60s. And so it's always around. And, you know, we were talking about what's trendy now in terms of body image. You know, social media will push that more than anything because it's so quick. It's not like, you know, before we had to watch a movie or we had to pick up a magazine to see it.
Yeah, and it's so intrusive now. Right. It's literally
in your face all the time.
In your home.
And it's not just for teenagers, even for adults, for women, for men, for... It's just, in general, it's so overwhelming, this constant feeling of my body's not good enough or my face is not good enough or I'm not tall enough, I'm not short enough, I'm not... You know, it's... we're never enough. This is what the feel is sort of promoting.
Speaking from experience, I highly recommend unfollowing anyone that makes you feel rubbish. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the funny thing is when I teach at the university, I teach a social psychology class. So we really look at the psychology of social behavior. And I tell them, because they always ask me, they say, well, Dr. T, how are you not affected by social media? And I say, look, it's not that I'm not affected, but I like to spin it in my own way to rationalize it to make me feel better. And I say, you know what? Before it was tall and thin, and then it became big chested, and then it became like big thighs or big behind, and then it became the really tone and the athletic and the muscles. And I said, eventually they'll get to my body type and I'll be happy when that happens. But for now, I'm not going to like stay with the times and stay with the trends because it's too exhausting. And I encourage a lot of people to do exactly what you said. Unfollow those that make you feel not good enough, but also recognize that you can be a great influencer in the way that you feel about yourself, regardless of what people sort of push in your face.
We've all got our own insecurities, things that we're not so keen on, but one woman has turned it around. She's asking why you should love your saggy boobs. This is Shadira Edgu, who is a 23-year-old award-winning blogger and the driving force behind Saggy Boobs Matter. It's an online movement that challenges unrealistic expectations of what breasts should look like. Here she is on Radio 5 Live.
The way women's bodies are represented in media, we are told that we are supposed to be polished, firm, perky and perfect all the time. And that just isn't realistic. I created the hashtag because as a young woman myself, I remember going to M&S to get my bras. And when I'd try on the bras that were given to me according to my correct fitting, I still wouldn't look like the woman that's on the packaging. And I'd feel like, why are my boobs so saggy? I am so young.
And how much did this get to you? Did you feel under a lot of pressure?
I definitely felt a lot of pressure, especially during secondary school. That was when my boobs appeared to be saggy to me. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, the moment I turn 18, I am saving up for a boob job. And it's really sad and absurd that I thought in that way. But you can't blame a teenager for thinking in that way, because as human beings, we have a herd mentality and we all want to be accepted, whether we admit to that or not. So as a young woman, I started to hide my body and wear these unnecessary push-up bras that would be uncomfortable for me, but just so that I could feel like I fit in and I look appealing.
Could you not take the view, who cares what other people think? I'm confident in myself.
Of course, I have that view, but why I chose to do this is because there are other women who don't yet have the strength in themselves to have that view, and that strength comes from self-awareness, and self-awareness often comes from choosing to love the parts about yourself that you've been taught to dislike, and not every woman has that willpower, so I've chosen to essentially be the sacrificial lamb here, because I know that no matter what's said about my body or even me, my value extends beyond other people's vision. And so it's important that if you're in a position where you're comfortable with yourself, it will be nice to help other people reach that point.
There you go. Hashtag saggy boobs matter. That was Shadira Edgu, a 23-year-old award-winning blogger and the driving force behind this new online movement. Now, Dr. Thryer, we've seen all sorts of crazy Instagram trends. Thigh gap.
Yeah.
That was big.
That's a new one. That's an old one, but the new term is Toblerone tunnel.
The what?
So do you know the chocolate Toblerones?
Yes, I do very well.
So they look like triangles, and so that's exactly what that is. So basically, it's the triangular space between the top of the thighs and the bikini bottom, and there should be a gap there.
Should there?
According to social media, that's one of the trends that's going around, and people talking about it and posting pictures of, you know, this is my Toblerone triangle and look how big it is. And
can we not just eat the Toblerone? But I mean, really, I think we'd probably all be a little bit happier if we were. But what concerns me then is young minds, young females especially, who I'm guessing this is certainly mm-hmm. more aimed at rather than male teens, looking at this and being faced with completely unrealistic expectations.
Absolutely. I mean, speaking of male teens as well as female teens, now there's the ribcage bragging, which is the idea of developing a body where your ribcage is showing. And, you know, the pictures that are up are basically the tagline is ribcage is your new accessory.
Wow.
And it has to be that your ribcage has to show without you sort of sucking anything in it. Just... So yeah,
I haven't seen my ribcage since an X-ray, quite frankly. We have really, really enjoyed your calls and messages over the last couple of hours, Dr. Thrye. Thank you so much for joining us from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. I'm going to leave the topic of body shaming on this letter from Caitlin Moran. This is a letter to her teenage daughter. She says, "Stay at peace with your body. While it's healthy, never think of it as a problem or a failure. Pat your legs occasionally and thank them for being able to run. Put your hands on your belly and enjoy how soft and warm you are. Marble over the world turning over within."
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.